While Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee asked him to dine with him, so he went in and reclined at table. The Pharisee was astonished to see that he did not first wash before dinner, and the Lord said to him, "Now you Pharisees cleanse the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But give as alms those things that are within, and behold, everything is clean for you. But woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb, and neglect justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love the best seat in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplace. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves, and people walk over them without knowing it." One of the lawyers answered him, "Teacher, in saying these things, you insult us also." And he said, "Woe to you lawyers also, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not touch the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets whom your fathers killed. So you are witnesses, and you consent to the deeds of your fathers, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, 'I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute, so that the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world may be charged against this generation, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be required of this generation. Woe to you lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering.' As he went away from there, the scribes and the Pharisees began to press him hard and to provoke him to speak about many things, lying in wait for him to catch him in something he might say. In the meantime, when so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were trampling one another, he began to say to the disciples first, 'Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on the housetops.'"
The end of Luke chapter 11, you notice that a Pharisee invites Jesus to come and dine with him. And that's not extraordinary in and of itself, that many of the rabbis would be interested in what is another rabbi's take on all these different things. We want to bounce questions off of him. Obviously, we've seen this before in our study of Luke, where they love to trap him and try to get him into saying something that either turns the religious against him or turns the common people against him. And this may be one of those situations. But verse 37, he goes and he dines with these Pharisees. And immediately Jesus senses this tension in the Pharisees' mind, because Jesus sits down and he just plunges into the meal and just starts eating. And they're getting all bent out of shape because Jesus didn't wash his hands first. And I want you to understand that this is not a hygiene thing. This is a ritual thing. They didn't care that someone may have germs on their hands, literally. What they cared is that we have these rituals. So Pharisees love to wash stuff. And you could actually read in the Talmud, there are all these rules about how to hold the arms so that the water flows a certain way and not another way, and how many times you have to rinse and all of that. And Jesus stops them, and the first thing you see here, he says, you cleanse the outside of the cup, but on the inside you're full of greed and wickedness. So the first thing here I hear Jesus saying is, you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with looking godly than being godly. Now, he's looking at these Pharisees and he's saying, you have this kind of holiness and righteousness, but it's so external. All these rituals, all these cleansings, all these washings, but inside your lives are a complete disaster. So what he's telling them, he's saying, you have this superficiality where you paint yourself a certain way. You want to look a certain way. But inside, in your hearts, he says, you're full of greed and wickedness. You're using even your spiritual positions of authority over others because you are greedy for fame. You are greedy for wealth. And you're wicked. You're taking what God has given you and you're twisting it. You know, I think today, I just always think of this term, Facebook righteousness. Like if the Pharisees existed today, and they do, they're just not called Pharisees, it would be this Facebook righteousness, this social media righteousness, where instead of being concerned ultimately with, am I godly? Am I walking with Christ? It would be more like, I want to say things and I want to appear a certain way, you know, and I've done this before where, and we counsel many other people outside our church, but I'll be sitting there in a counseling session, this couple, married couple, is like fighting back and forth and arguing, and like the way they leave counseling is like, well, you can just sleep on the couch tonight. And an hour later, I see on Facebook, this husband and wife, like, I love you so much. You're my dream come true. No, I love you more. No, I love you more. And you're like, what is that about? I mean, you ever know people like that, that you're like, there seems to be a complete disconnect between the person you present yourself to be, the kind of relationships you present yourself to have, and what I just experienced again this other time. Or man, what an awesome time of worship at this concert. And like we just read this morning, this was the reason for this text. Do you know God actually tells his people, yes, I want you to worship. But if you're not really worshiping in your heart and walking with me in your heart, all this big song and dance you do, it's just more ritual. And it's hypocritical because you know, and I know on the inside, you're not worshiping. You're just standing there and you're putting stuff out there and you're going to concerts and you're saying it in, you know, in social media kind of things. But where's your heart? You're more concerned with looking godly than being godly. And then going on here, he starts giving them these woes, and that's it's more sadness than we hear maybe judgment in that, but it's really more a deep grief that Jesus is reflecting back to this group of men. And he says, woe to you, verse 42, you tithe mint and rue and every herb and neglect the justice and love of God. And this was a literal thing, by the way, but it'd be like literally taking one of those little thyme plants with all those little tiny leaves. And they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. OK, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. OK, 10, 1, 2, 3. And they're literally doing that with their teeny tiny little herb plants. And Jesus says, and where is your justice? There's no justice. There's no concern for justice. You're the power brokers of your society. You men collectively, you could determine what justice is and what it looks like in your culture, but you're not even striving for that. And I put it this way, Jesus is saying to them, you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with the minuscule than with the massive. One writer says it this way, the Pharisees had calculated their tithing down to the decimal point and they never missed a leaf. But when someone came to them with a personal material need, they responded like stingy characters from a Dickens novel. Scrooge. Like, no, I've already tithed. You can't eat out of my garden because I've already tithed the tenth of that to God. And God would say, well, what's the point of all of this? Is to show your love for me and to show your love for your neighbor. And you're not willing to do that because you're so obsessed with all this good stuff you're doing. Many of you know, I went to a pretty conservative Christian college, and we literally, I think it was Tuesdays, we had hair check. So you finish 3 hours of class, you go off to chapel, and as you're walking in chapel, and there's thousands of students coming in chapel, down every aisle that you could possibly find your way into this building and find your seat, there are at least one, sometimes two ushers. And those ushers are standing there, and they're like, they're looking at the guys as they walk by, and they're like, nope, your hair is off by 2 millimeters. You get demerits. You got to go see the dean. Then you waste a bunch of time. You miss lunch because you're standing in this long line because your hair is a millimeter too long by someone's definition of too long. You know, after I graduated, I found out after the fact there were two very large theaters at our school that actually had like these built-in light booths up here that had catwalks. And you've seen these at like Buell Theater or something like that you get up in there. And it was found after the fact that some of these guys who were measuring the millimeters of other guys, is your hair touching the top of your ear? They were running an escort ring out of the light booth over the theater. Jesus would say, you are concerned with the minuscule while letting the massive pass by. And you seem to feel no conviction while being nitpicky about this. You know, Jesus elsewhere in the Sermon on the Mount uses the illustration of the speck versus the log. And there he's really talking about, make sure you do this self-examination first before you really dig into other people's business. Otherwise, you're not going to see their business clearly if something's stuck in your eye. But these are the Pharisees that they're constantly obsessing over the speck, the splinter, and ignoring the log. You know, Jesus says it this way in Matthew 23:24. He says, you strain at gnats and you swallow camels. The idea, you see a little bug floating in your drink and you fish that out. But of course, it's just meant to be funny and excessive. But then you're just swallowing camels whole and thinking nothing of it. We looked at Micah 6:8 in our renewal text this morning, and this is where God says to these people, you know, if you were to read the context, he's saying, you know, you're doing all these things. You're obsessing over all this minutia in your lives and controlling other people's lives with your minutia. And he says, but you're not doing the most basic things. What are the most basic things? He says, he has told you, oh man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Do those three things. Focus on those three things. Not the minor, not the minutia. Now, verse 43, he says, woe to you again. Woe to you again. For you love the best seat in the synagogues and the greetings in the marketplaces. What he's saying here is you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with being respected than with being respectable. The idea of the best seats in the synagogue, these were the ones up on stage that faced the people, in essence. And so these guys, they love to sit up on stage and be like, I'm going to be up here. So when I pray and when I lift my hands, everyone can see what I'm doing and think that I'm a super godly person. You know, when that guy's teaching and I'm thumbing through my scroll and I'm looking at my thing and I'm taking detailed notes, people are like, wow, that is a really spiritual person. And they're looking at these people that are up there, not just common people, and saying those are the ones with authority. You know, they did the same thing. What he's talking about, the greeting in the marketplaces, is these rabbis would see each other coming from way across the temple grounds and be like, oh, hail, Rabbi so-and-so. And they'd, yes, and same to you, Rabbi so-and-so. And I mean, you ever know these people that on their business card, they have to put every single title, every single little initials, and every single certification that they've ever gotten? And not because they're in a job interview, but they just want everyone to know. This is the way the Pharisees were with each other. And they would do it loudly. And they had these grand rituals of greeting one another so that all the common people gathered around, coming from other cities to worship God at the temple in Jerusalem, they hear these greetings and they're like, oh, he's a somebody. He's really important. That's why he's wearing what he's wearing. And you see that they're very concerned with being respected. Do people respect me? Do they admire me? But they're not dealing with their character in a way where they make themselves respectable. You know, this is that age-old differentiation between reputation, what people think you to be, and character, what you actually are when no one's looking. And the Pharisees are working overtime on reputation enhancement. And they literally made decisions in terms of, if this enhances my reputation, I will do it. If it doesn't, I mean, it's just a character issue. Like, none of us care about that. Well, which one are you working on? Are you working on what others think of you? Or are you spending time with God and spending time with groups that breathe into your life like real accountability to say, not what do you look like, not what do we think about you, but who are you? I've had people over the years of ministry come and say, you know, it just like basically it hurts my feelings that you don't admire me more. While doing these really big sins that none of you would admire them. And the obsession is people don't admire me. People don't look up to me. You know, people don't treat me as a mentor or a counselor in this particular church. Maybe I'll go somewhere where that I do get treated that way. And I think, you know, why don't you just work on being respectable and people will respect you? You know, you start doing justice and loving mercy and walking humbly with God. And what naturally happens is that people do respect you. Well, moving on here, verse 44, the next woe. Jesus says, woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves and people walk over them without knowing it. Put it like this. Jesus is saying you're a hypocrite, or you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with deceiving than defending God's people. And here's the picture. Obviously, what's in a grave? Dead people. Defilement. For if you're a Jew, you can't come anywhere near dead people. And there was actually a tradition in this day that, and you may have heard other texts where Jesus said, you know, you're like whitewashed tombs. But that was actually a good thing back then, that if there was a tomb, and often it was just a stone in the ground, that someone was supposed to come along periodically and apply a coat of whitewash so that it didn't just look like a rock. It stood out as a tomb. And they were supposed to call attention to the fact there's defilement here. And as good Jews, as observant Jews, you may want to avoid this whole area because it's a burial ground. And what Jesus is saying is, your lives and your system is marked by death and defilement. And people get around you, and because you haven't marked out where that nasty stuff is, morally speaking, people just walk into it and they themselves are defiled. And I thought of this verse, Hebrews 12:15, that maybe some of you know, where the author of Hebrews is warning us about bitterness, about carrying a lack of forgiveness in our lives. And he says, you know, get rid of this bitterness lest you defile many. And some of you have seen that where one person or one little group being bitter, how it has this permeating effect. And you notice what Jesus said at the end, beware the leaven of the Pharisees. Leaven is yeast. You put yeast in there, and though it's basically invisible, it's invisibly doing its thing. And the dough is doubling or quadrupling in size. It has a massive effect to reproduce itself. And this is what Jesus is warning about here, is that even though your defilement has this opportunity or has this potential to massively reproduce defilement, you're more concerned with hiding that and deceiving people and getting them to think one thing than actually defending God's people. And sometimes the way we do that is to say, you know, like the way I defend you is by confessing that I myself was the one that was wrong about that. So I'm not going to continue to repeat this lie or this deceit. We'll own up to it and say, I'm more interested in defending the bride of Christ than in tricking you. Now, there's this interesting interruption right here, right? So Jesus has pronounced a couple woes, and this lawyer or this scribe, and we think legal, that's what lawyers are today. But back then, the experts in the law were experts in the law of God. And so you can think of it this way, that the general population was like a group of hyper fundamentalist people. And within that, the scribes or the lawyers were like the seminary professors. And so the seminary professor of the, you know, the more common legalistic people is like, Jesus, so in the things you're saying, you realize you're insulting us too, right? And you notice that Jesus doesn't pull back like, oh, my goodness, I didn't mean to communicate anything unloving or anything intolerant. I'm so sorry. He's like, great. You feel insulted? Because that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm insulting you. So I'm glad that you picked up on that. And he just keeps going. Verse 45. Woe to you also, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not touch the burdens with even one of your fingers. Jesus is saying you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with controlling behaviors than carrying burdens. Saying you guys lay it on thick. The law, and then the hedge about the law, and then the hedge about the hedge about the law. And you're getting people further and further and further from the actual point of Scripture by all your rules. And no one can possibly keep all these rules. And by the way, you're doing this from the outside in, right? How are you trying to control people's behaviors? You're doing it from the outside in. You're imposing boundaries and regulations and rules and restrictions and punishments. But that doesn't ever actually change anyone's heart. You know, one example of this in the time of Jesus was the Talmud, the stuff that the scribes and the Pharisees wrote their own basically commentary on the Old Testament. And in this commentary, just take the Sabbath day. You know, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's God's law. Where these scribes and Pharisees had written 39 categories of work that they said, when God says, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, it means don't do any of these 39 categories of work. I was reminded, we were staying at a hotel in Colorado Springs this weekend for Micah's 4th birthday. And it was the worst elevator situation we've ever seen. I mean, there's like 3 tiny elevators for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hotel rooms and all these families going up and down. So one time I was trying to run back Great Wolf Lodge. There's a big water park, And we were just taking our kids to get down to go to the water park. And they said, you don't have to wear shoes in the hotel. And so we tried to go into the breakfast area for brunch. And they were like, well, your little boys, they have to wear shoes. So I go to run back up to the hotel room. And this little kid, I jump on the elevator. And it's like me and one other kid. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is going to go quick. And he does the whole brrrr thing. And I'm like, okay. So we're going to stop at every single floor. Well, I don't know if you know this, but in Jewish culture, they have what's actually called a Shabbat elevator. You know about this? So because one of the categories of work would be like pushing a button to select the 17th floor. So the elevator on the Sabbath day automatically stops at every single floor. And I heard another pastor tell a story one time. He was vacationing or I think doing a missions trip or something over in the Holy Land. And he got on the elevator. And there's the Shabbat elevator and there's the Gentile elevator. And they're side by side. They're clearly marked. And he gets on there and he's going up to like the 30th floor, just hits 30. And he says, as soon as all these Jews saw him get on the Gentile elevator, they got out of the Shabbat elevator. They come over here and they get in his elevator and they're like, 17, please. You know, and he can push it for them, but they can't push it. And this is the sort of shenanigans that's going on in the time of Jesus where he's saying, guys, you lay on these oppressive regulations. That did that transform anybody's heart? No, because at least the spirit of it would not be to get out of here, come over here with the pagan Gentile and say, it's okay if you do it for me. That's clearly not the spirit of the law. Rules crush people. If we're trying to impose a religion or a moral ethic from the outside in, that we're more concerned with controlling people's behaviors and getting the right set of behaviors and words out of people that we want to see instead of transformed hearts, it's not going to happen. It's just going to crush them. I thought of this a few years ago when we were at the Rose Bowl parade out in Pasadena, and they have all these floats go by that different groups make, these floats that are not that they're entirely made out of flowers, but they're entirely covered with flowers, right? So they're, I mean, big, ginormous, beautiful floats. And this one goes by, and I'm totally unaware of this situation. This beautiful float starts coming down past us, and SeaWorld, they had put this float together. And all of a sudden, all these protesters came out on the parade route with signs, and they're yelling and screaming and frantic, and they just sit down on the parade route, and they block the SeaWorld float from going any further. I'm like, what's this about? And Marty had seen in the news, she's like, well, you know, have you heard about that, the movie Blackfish? I hadn't heard about it at the time. Now I know about it. So Blackfish is like, SeaWorld is evil, SeaWorld is bad. They're doing all these things. PETA gets involved and all this stuff. Now, regardless of where you land with SeaWorld, I looked up what Blackfish was about. And Blackfish kind of follows the life of this killer whale, Tilikum. Tilikum has killed three people in captivity. And the point of this is you can take Tilikum out of the ocean and you can put this giant predator in a tank and try to train it and constrain it and fence it in and feed it the way you want to feed it on your schedule and do all that. But at the heart, Tilikum is still a killer whale. Tilikum is still a predator. And you can't take a killer whale and make it something else by outside in regulations. And that's just an illustration of what these Pharisees and these scribes are trying to do with people. They're not looking at how do we change our own hearts so that we are Christ-like, so that we love God from the inside out. It's merely about behavioral control, and it doesn't work. Going on here, verse 47, Jesus says, woe to you again, for you build the tombs of the prophets whom your fathers killed. Now, to stop there, he talks a lot more about from Abel to Zechariah. That's basically from the A to the Z of the prophets of the Old Testament. You killed them all. Your fathers killed them all. And what he's saying now is you guys build these grand tombs, these edifices, and say, come and value the prophets who were killed by our fathers. And here's what Jesus is saying. You might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with show than submission. Let me tell you what Jesus is saying very simply. He's saying, you don't honor a prophet by building a giant mausoleum. You honor a prophet by doing what they told you to do. They are my messengers. They have been sent from God with a message from God. And you ignore their message. You do nothing with their message, even to this day. You know, who are the messengers in Jesus' day? Well, like John the Baptist, and then ultimately Jesus, who is the third person of the Trinity. He's God himself. And they're rejecting him and saying, but look, we build these great monuments and people can come and appreciate what words these men have given us. It's like the person today who, you know, they put on Facebook, you got to listen to this song or the sermon clip or read this sick meme that I found online. And you're like, why are you posting a sermon about that? Like, we just talked about that, and you're not willing to do that. You know what I mean? So it's like you're looking like you honor Piper and you honor Keller and you honor these great men and women who have, you know, they said this in their Bible study, and it just really hit me. And again, you're like, but where's the submission in your life? I mean, yeah, those are great words. It's a great song. But are you surrendering your life to the truth of that song and surrendering it to Christ? Or are you just posting that to say, look at it, look how we honor these things. Look how great they are to us. Seventh, Jesus says, woe to you, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering. Jesus is saying, you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with law than gospel. Because again, these are lawyers he's talking to. These are experts in the Old Testament law of God. And he's saying, great, you guys know every jot, every tittle, every little mark or stroke that a scribe could make with his pen. You know exactly where it goes. But you missed the key to the whole thing. And he's basically picturing it as there's a door, you know, a door to the kingdom of God, a door to fellowship with God. And he's saying, not only do you not have the key to get in yourselves, you have stood in front of that door and you have turned around and faced the people and you have barred their way from getting in. That's what you're doing, because you are more concerned with law than gospel. There's also a figurative key here. You know, you ever do these as kids where you make up codes and you pass this to your brother or you pass it to a friend or something and you're like, can you figure out what this says? We've done this at our spy camp during the summer. You know, you come up with these codes. And what do people need, or what makes deciphering that code very easy, is if you get the key and you're like, oh, this mark is an A, this is a B, this is a C, and so on. Now I can decipher the code. This is another way of looking at it, is saying you miss the key to deciphering the whole Old Testament. And so you can read it and you can tell the stories and you can reinforce the laws that are there, but you're not actually deciphering what any of that is actually about. Going on here, verse 53, as he went away, they began to press him hard and to provoke him to speak about many things, lying in wait for him to catch him in something he might say. Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed. Nothing is hidden that will not be known. Last thing I see Jesus saying here is, you might be a hypocrite if you're more concerned with catching others in sin and covering up your own sin than you are in just confessing. You know, the Pharisees were basically magicians. You ever do this? And I know even some of our kids have learned this sort of thing, the sleight of hand trick, where often a magician, part of the magic or one of the main categories of magic is sleight of hand. And what the person is doing as they talk and they're making big movements is they're getting you to look where they want you to look so that they can do something else where you're not looking. And Jesus is saying, spiritually, religiously, morally, ethically, this is what you guys are all about, is these moral, ethical sleights of hand that you get everyone to look where you want them to look. Like, oh, here's the problem with our culture today, is these people over here. And everybody's looking over here where the Pharisees and the scribes and the lawyers are pointing. And meanwhile, the Pharisees, they got their own thing going on that's completely contrary to the very heart of the law of God. And you see this where they're going after Jesus. They're going after the Son of God, and they're trying to provoke him, it says, to speak about many things. You know, the more words that we can get him to say, surely we can trip him up at some point with saying something that doesn't sit well with us or doesn't sit well with the people. But then notice this, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed. So while they're over here trying to catch everybody else and their stuff, they're experts at hiding what we do, rather than just confessing. set a model for your people by just repenting of your own sin and confessing it at a level that's appropriate. So you're looking at these eight things, basically different ways to be hypocritical. And I want to summarize, and what you'll notice is across all eight of these things, what you're looking at is externalism. What you're looking at is an obsession with appearances. You know, I want to make sure that I look good, that I'm respectable, righteous, holy. I do the rituals. I put in the time. But inside, it's not real. There's no integrity between the heart and the external behaviors. But I thought, let's go a step further than that. So as you look at those eight things, have you ever wondered why? Why are people hypocrites? Why am I a hypocrite? Have you ever asked yourself that question? When I find myself doing some of these things, and hopefully you have the humility and the vulnerability with yourself to say, I can see where I do that, and you're not just thinking of someone else. You know, the bottom line of why we do those behaviors is because we don't believe the gospel. That's the why. And what I mean specifically is when we think that our value, that our worth is found in what we appear to be doing for God, this is immediately what will happen in our lives. Let me say that again. If you think your identity, your worth, your value is tied to what you appear to be doing for God, you will always go down this path of hypocrisy. And I'll tell you why. It's duplicitous, because if you think my worth first to God and then to other people is determined by what they think I'm doing. So what do we do with relation to ourselves? Well, we put our best foot forward. We try to make sure people only see the good that we're doing, only hear the good that we're saying. And we even elevate it. We draw attention to it. You know, it's Jesus saying, like, these are the guys praying in the marketplace, and they're just praying at the top of their lungs, and they're just repeating words over and over again so more people have time to go by and see how much they're praying. Or when they're giving alms, you know, it's like they drop it from as high as possible so it makes a sound, and people look and like, wow, what a generous, that was 4 coins. This is a 4-coin day for Rabbi so-and-so. So not only are they finding their identity in it, but they want you to see, look how good I am. Look how righteous I am. Look how I walk with God in generosity. I say it's duplicitous because at the very same time that you're doing those external things in relation to yourself, what are you doing in relation to others? The hypocrite does not build other people around him or her up. They want to put other people down. They want to catch other people in sin so that the gap between themselves and others looks bigger and therefore they look more righteous. Because if you feel like pond scum and then you see me give, you'll be like, wow, I wish I could give like that. I wish I served like that. And this is the bottom line, that when and to the degree that we find our value and our worth in what we are doing for God, rather than in what he's done for us. When we treasure things that we can just go and grasp, rather than treasuring things that are unseen, things that are provided by God, we'll always go through this cycle of hypocrisy. Let me end with this very briefly. There's hope for the hypocrites here. I want you to see 3 simple things out of this text. First of all, Jesus comes. Let that hit you, that this guy invites Jesus into their house for dinner with a bunch of Pharisees, with a bunch of self-righteous hypocrites. And Jesus knows full well that that's the environment he's walking into. He knows how that conversation is going to go. But you notice he doesn't say, hey, I'll wait until you guys get your hearts right and then I'll come. But like he does with anybody, he pursues and he goes and says, fine, like you're never going to clean up your lives on your own. I will come to you. And I will expose you to something that has the opportunity at least to transform your heart because I'm coming. But then I think where most of this text lands is secondly, not only does Jesus come, but Jesus convinces you that your real identity and worth are not found in your performance for God. Your real identity and worth are found in God's grace to you. See, because what Jesus is teaching, even though he's not explicitly saying this over and over, what he's teaching is the gospel is calling you to the opposite of these 8 woes. these people are looking at the outside. They're looking at identifying their worth and their value in terms of the external, in terms of what they do for God. That's, you're missing the whole, verse 52, you're missing the whole key. Friends, you understand, you don't have to prove your worth to God. You don't have to prove your worth to anybody. God has come to you in Christ and accepted you just as you are, but loved you enough to transform you and make you a whole new person. And how he does it, point three, is from the inside out. Notice that when Jesus is coming to you, he's not saying you need to trade these behaviors for these other behaviors. This is what real righteousness looks like. You need to stop saying stuff like this and start saying like this, and then God will accept you. Jesus never talks that way. He has this little interesting clue here, right? He says, go back to the almsgiving, verses 40 and 41. He says, you know, you give these alms, and you make a big public show of your worship and your generosity. But then he says this, give as alms those things that are within. What's he saying? Well, almsgiving is what? It's like I've got coins and I see someone with a need. And so I sacrifice. I give financially, you know, and to the degree that I don't really have extra means, that sacrifice hurts me a little bit because I'm giving out of my means. But Jesus is saying, in essence, don't surrender your coinage. Surrender what's inside. Surrender your heart. Surrender your mind, surrender your will. Let me change you there. Let me transform your life there and tell you who you really are in me. And this is the core thought of this text, I think, that Christianity is not a law to obey. It's a gospel to believe. Because Jesus is not substituting one law for another law. He's saying, instead of living for the law, which always makes you superficial, the whole essence of what it means to follow me, the key to unlocking the Old Testament, is you got to see me there. You know, in the sacrifices, when you're taking the life of an innocent lamb to wash away and cover the stain of your sin, what is that picturing? That's picturing the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ, who would come and wash away the stain of your sin. And you simply believe that someone innocent died in your place and forgave you. And you have a new identity by sheer grace. The gospel is simply news to believe. But Jesus is saying, when you believe that, when you trust me, it transforms you from the inside out. To the degree that you don't believe the gospel functionally, you will continue to try to define your life in terms of the behaviors that you think you can do. And you will continue to point out where you think other people have failed. And most people will stand back as the third party and see that you're a hypocrite. By the way, I'm not asking for a show of hands, but how many, as I go through these eight things, you're like, oh, yeah, she's a hypocrite. He's a hypocrite. That group, hypocrites. Is it easier to see other people as hypocrites than to see yourself as a hypocrite? We'll talk about that in our community groups this week. Why is that? Why do we have such fundamental transparency into the inconsistencies of other people's lives, and it's much harder to see it ourselves? But hear me out. The more you base your life that way on externals, on this is what I do for God, I hope other people notice, you will always alter the narrative of your life. Because when you're successful, you will elevate and you will boast in your successes because that's your identity. And you want other people to know, I did this. I sacrificed for that. I gave this person a ride. I'm just going to post it on Facebook. Jesus is so thankful for the opportunity today to help this person out, you know? And Jesus is like, yeah, thanks. And you got your reward. Because what you wanted was the praise of people, and you just got it. Because you weren't doing it to seek the praise of God. But if we live this way, this hypocritical, superficial, external way, we will always boast in our successes. We'll be arrogant and proud about our successes, and we will hide our failures. We will rewrite the record. We'll pretend like, I didn't do that. I didn't say that. And we play this game, don't we? Like, I wasn't God. That's not what I meant. And everybody else knows that's what you meant. But to the degree that you hope completely in Christ, you're free to acknowledge your sins and failures. Yeah, I did it. I mean, even really big, bad stuff, you can say, you know what? I did it. I'm guilty. I have no one to blame but myself. But you know what? I'm free. And that thing does not define me. That sin does not define, that is not the last chapter of my life. That is a comma, not a period. Because I belong to Christ and I am forgiven. I'm going to walk into church with my head up, knowing I am forgiven. I am cleansed. I am declared righteous. He loves me. And honestly, so do other gospel believing, gospel practicing Christians. If you believe the gospel, you're free to be who you are in your successes, in your failures, without being defined by them. And then your life comes into integrity, because what people see on the outside aligns with what God is doing on the inside, and you're able to overflow into the lives of others. So do you live your life with integrity? Are you free? Do you want to be free this morning?